So welcome back again, another episode. I think this might be 14. I don't know if I've ever done 14 episodes of anything before, but I think I'm on episode 14 of Addiction and Redemption, something like that. Like I said before, iTunes will get it in the proper order. So thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Keenest. This is brought to you by Keenest Coaching. Hit me up if you'd like to chat about some fundamental challenges you may be facing. But I left off. I basically just wandered out of Japan. Like, I wandered out of this place I had been sleeping for the previous 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 nights. I don't even know. And I wandered to an airport, and I wandered home to Chicago. And it's fucked up because if you were to show me a map still to this day of Japan, I have no clue. I don't know where I was. I have no clue where I was. I don't know who I would ask. I wouldn't know who to ask to get that question answered. There's actually a Facebook friend I have who might be able to tell me, but I don't think she's on Facebook anymore. Maybe she is. But anyway, she kind of appeared back into the story a little later on, but I'll get to that all in good time. But I, like I said, I wandered home, and I finally got back to Chicago after I don't know how long, and I'm drunk the whole time, and I'm telling everybody I encounter that my best friend died and that I had to leave Japan to come back for a funeral, and that's why I'm drinking so much. I'm like, my friend died, feed me more liquor. And so these plain people, they just keep getting me drunker because I'm telling them this lie that somebody died. And then I'm sitting down next to this woman, giving her the sob story, and she's got all these pharmaceutical pills in this giant, like, you know, those giant plastic pill containers, but like a multi-leveled one, you know, that's just like you could keep your vitamins and your Advil and then all your antipsychotics and your benzos and your pain. It was like a massive pill container. And so she's like giving me pills too. So now I'm like taking pills on the plane with this woman. And I just actually remembered her now for like the first time since very shortly after I got back. And I flew first into San Francisco from wherever I was in Japan and had a layover in San Francisco. And then I flew from San Francisco back to Chicago. So that's like a 5-hour flight in and of itself. So you do the math. I don't really know. And I land back in Chicago, and I get back to O'Hare Airport, and I just borrow somebody's phone and call my parents. And I'm like, I'm home. And my mom answers and is just like, well, you're missing. And she's just, I'm not going to go into my mother, but my God, she was freaking out. She's a professional worrier. She worries for a living. And I don't think I've ever caused anyone more suffering than I caused her and my dad. And I don't think that, it's probably why I don't have kids. I'm really afraid to have this all come back to me. Among other reasons, but that's a whole other thing in and of itself. So it was just the craziest thing ever. And I remember, like, they came to get me, or my mom came to get me at the airport, or my dad came to get me at the airport. And I don't really remember what happened other than I told my mother that I'd been doing heroin and that was what the real problem was. And then I remember getting home and just hugging my mom in the kitchen and just being like, I don't know what the hell is going on. I just cried like a baby. And I just had no clue. Like, it was just the most craziest thing ever. I've never been in more pain in my life. I've never experienced more just agony. It was like my soul was just on fire from the inside out. It was just like just this really specific type of god-awful misery. It was just like burning. It was like my eyeballs wanted to pop out because there was like fire, burning fire behind them, like propelled by something evil. But they had to, like, that if they popped out, I would have gotten relief, you know, but they were just stuck there. And like, I was just stuck in this experience and just stuck in this body and just stuck in what had just happened. And basically I woke up again. I slept that one off, right? So then I just wake up again, you know, back in Chicago in my bedroom. And it was basically like I just traveled around the world, woke up out of a blackout in Japan, and then woke up the next time I came to, I was like basically waking up out of a blackout back in Chicago, back in my bedroom. So just imagine for yourself what that would be like. And it's like, how do you face the world after something like that has happened? Like, how do you communicate? You know, how do you make any sense of that? Because by this point, everybody had heard. You know, by this point, like, it had kind of gotten out through various avenues. Nobody knew the specific details, but, you know, it had gotten back to, you know, I started to come to, and I'm trying to make light of it, even though there's no light to be made. And I'm telling people, and then they're telling others, and they're telling others, and it got back to Colorado, and then the people in the bar I used to hang out are hearing about it, and it's just like this thing that people are laughing about, but they're and talking about, but there was nothing funny. I mean, there was just nothing funny at all. Even though I was trying to find funny stuff about it, find something funny in it, there were no wisecracks left. And I remember, like, I had a joint that I found, like, in my drawer, and I went out to my parents' front porch, and I smoked a joint, and this is probably, like, not long after I woke up, and I smoked this joint, and then the enormity of what had just happened in my life hit me. Now, I don't want to play the victim here and make it sound like this thing happened to me, because I created this. There was a series of choices I made from a young age that led to this moment. But at the same time, it happened. It just like happened to me. And it was the most just, it was just this defining moment in my life. Like, what in the hell are you going to do to get out of this one? I had absolutely no idea. I've never felt so stuck or lost or whatever you would use to describe that state of being. And I had actually gotten over the heroin. It had been like 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 days at this point. I'd like gotten through the withdrawal part, and I didn't, like, I was like an opportunity for me to get my shit together. But how do you get your shit together once you've destroyed your life that bad and you have no idea where the resources are? You have no idea who to call. You have no idea who will help. You've heard of that thing called rehab, you know? But, like, how do you even make that work? You know, it's like not even really knowing where to begin to get the help that kind of, in a lot of ways, makes up a huge part of my life today. And that just kind of reset the whole thing. I think maybe 1 or 2 days later, I went back to the West Side and got some more and was right back at it. So I was just addicted to the dope again. I was back down on the West Side every day, and it just all happened so fast. I didn't think about it. And then when I got the dope in me, then I got the relief. Then I felt okay. Then I felt like I could face the days again. And then I kind of started to get my shit together again. So apparently or supposedly or started to get my shit together in quotation marks, you know, and it just from there, it's almost like from this moment on, it just got darker and darker and darker. And this was May of 2006. So 2006 was officially my worst year. So I'm going to end it here and we'll pick up with where the story goes upon my return. So thanks again for listening. Dave Keenest, brought to you by Keenest Coaching. Thanks again for listening. Have a beautiful night. Bye.